Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. Welcome home, y'all. This is episode 15 of Native Land Pod, where we give you all of our political takes on everything politics and culture and a quick and easy digestible breakdown. We are your co-hosts, Tiffany Cross, Angela Rye, and I am Andrew Gillum. What's going on, Tiff and Rye? How are you in your part of the country?
Welcome home, y'all.
Welcome home.
I gotta say, I'm fantastic. I don't like it because we're remote again. And I feel like when we're together, we have a lot more fun. So it's like trying to hang out with your people over a Zoom call.
I kind of think you've been having fun without us.
Your shirt is speaking volumes. Oh, well.
Is she telling on herself? It says weed is vegan, for those of y'all who can't say.
Weed is vegan. But we're still reunited and it feels so good.
In this week's episode, Trump's second trial in, I don't know, count them, 365 is underway. But this one is a criminal indictment being brought by New York prosecutor Alvin Bragg. The Stormy Daniels hush money case and trial rather started on Monday with jury selection. The former president will be getting, count them, 4 free days of publicity every week for as long as the trial lasts due to his alleged propensity toward wrongdoing. SCOTUS also appears to be wilding. If this week's oral arguments and the obstruction of justice case are any indication of things to come about the insurrection and its protests, lots to get to on that. Then for this week's deep dive, we're going to get into minority rule, which happens when the minority of the population controls the levels of government so that basically, the rest of us, the majority, live under the control of a small minority. Is this what the framers intended? And is this the kind of democracy we're living under? Also, it is Black Maternal Health Week. Black mothers face disproportionately high rates of maternal and infant mortality. And these are absolutely preventable deaths, which is why it's so important that we talk about them. We all know that politics are everywhere, and this week it is all about women's salaries in sports. College basketball star Caitlin Clark and some of our faves, Angel Reese and Camila Cardoza, were just drafted into the WNBA, and folks are surprised, maybe horrified, even outraged at how much, or rather, how low women's salaries in sports still unfortunately are. And then commemorate, along with my co-host, Tiffany Cross, 420, we will not blaze it up like we did last week.
No,
I'm messing with you. I'm talking about last week's episode.
We
do want to ensure that you know that politics of cannabis are indeed everywhere. Stick around for some great questions and comments from our Native Land Pod fam. And of course, our calls to actions from each of the hosts. Stay tuned, everybody. It's going to be a good one. Trump's trials continued this week. He's facing charges in New York for hush money payments that he made during the 2016 election cycle to adult film star Stormy Daniels. It's the first time in U.S. history that a former president is being tried on criminal charges. Jury selection began on Monday in the case that's expected to, disrupt, maybe some might argue help Trump during this presidential contest, as he is going to be on trial, at least we believe, for the next month or two. Now, y'all, I understand yesterday, or rather earlier this week, seven jurors were chosen for to serve as part of the official trial. They were sworn in. They make up, I believe, four men, three women. Among them are two lawyers. There are 11 more jurors to be selected. 34 counts of falsifying business records altogether is what is involved in this trial. And as I said, jury selection did begin earlier this week, and it's expected to be over by the end of this week, early next week, with statements for opening beginning on Monday. Now, y'all, Trump could not help himself. We heard earlier in the selection, he was batting his eyes, maybe giving them a little bit of a rest throughout the process. But we know he was alive and in effect during the break. This is what he had to say when he was able to step out of the courtroom.
If you look at Jonathan Turley, Andy McCarthy, all great legal scholars, there's not one that we've been able to find that said this should be a trial. I was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense, some accountant, I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you get indicted over that?
I was paying a lawyer and some accountant marked it down as a legal expense. Did I hear an admission, y'all? What do you think?
I think that I want to shout out the first black DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, who is following in the successful footsteps of the dynamic Tish James in second black attorney to be able to go after Donald Trump. And it's no wonder they are so afraid, as our good sister Joy said, of DEI, because DEI is coming for this dude. Exactly. I also think it's important to note that this is, you said it in the rundown, Andrew, it's Donald Trump's first of several criminal trials. This one, of course, in New York. A lot of this could get put on hold based on what we talk about next in the Supreme Court, what they end up deciding in that presidential immunity case. A lot of this could end up being of no consequence when we get to where they land in June or July, when those decisions come out in the summer.
No, that's right. I just thought it was odd. I don't know if you for those who were listening to the audio and weren't looking at it, as Donald Trump says, I was talking to a lawyer and I paid a lawyer and some accountant, wrote it down as a legal expense. His lawyers begin to look at each other in the back and they sort of start to confer. And I'm like, man, this guy is got to be making your job that much harder. But for him to admit, I paid this guy, my lawyer. And of course, the allegation here is that he paid his lawyer to pay Stormy Daniels.
That would be Michael Cohen.
Rather, to repay, to endorse.
For the people trying to figure that out.
Yeah, Michael, correct. But mm-hmm. because he didn't name check him, he just said, I paid a lawyer. And it was later then noted as such. But he pays Cohen, reimburses Cohen an amount. They mark it down as a business expense. And that's exactly what is in the crosshairs here, that you cannot write it down as an expense for business if it is, in fact, a payment for a bribe or to silence someone.
It's hush money. 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to hide reimbursement payments to former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen is the
Well,
case.
Can I just say, I think it's important. Had I had time, I definitely would have pulled some sound from Stormy Daniels, because I think it's important to remind people what happened exactly yes. that evening. Stormy Daniels was 27 years old at the time. Donald Trump was 60. It was a really compelling interview that Anderson Cooper did, solid journalist and a great journalist interview he did with her, because he allowed her to tell her story. A 27-year-old woman had gone to his room. She was an adult film star. She's very clear this was not a Me Too situation. She had gone to the bathroom, and when she came out, he was on the bed propositioning her, and she just looked like, blech. She said, you know, this was not something that she wanted to do. Melania had just given birth to their son, just like maybe 2 or 3 months prior. He was offering her, asking her, would she be willing to be a contestant on The Apprentice? Stormy Daniels is an adult film star. She is no fool. She actually ran for Senate, I want to say, in 2018. She's been a well-known adult film star, but also has dabbled in politics and has been very well aware. This 60-year-old man, before he was president, when he was having sex with her, did not wear a condom with her. So I think these things are important to note for this quote-unquote conservative, right-wing, self-described pro-life party that they are uplifting. This is your president. So outside of whatever moral or ethical issues you have, I am not here to make that judgment. I'm just putting out the story. But aside from these moral ethical judgments that people have, then you have the legal issue, Andrew, which you just pointed out. Michael Cohen paid her. And yes, you very keen observation that he just came out and admitted it. What he didn't say is what he paid her for. So while that might not have been illegal, but certainly it's something that the American body politic should be reminded of, because our attention span for such things is very short. And because there's been 5011 trials and updates and minutiae each day on his legal troubles, people have a tendency to forget what this was actually all about. We can just reduce it to the hush money trial, but let's remember the actual details of it. I have to say what disgusts me, to be honest, we have not learned our lesson. And I look at cable news and the anchors and the executives salivating and tripping over themselves to carry this wall-to-wall coverage. It's like, yes, we have our new, you know, courtroom drama that we can, you know, blanket our coverage with. And I do.
October surprise.
Yes. And it's like we get to have our cable ratings boon again. We can have all these, you know, people tune into the breaking news banner constantly. And just this week alone, and most people, unfortunately, do not consume paper. So just this week alone, I think of all the news that was not reported, that was overlooked, we're on the brink of, I dare say, perhaps another third world war. And we don't get to deep dive and dissect those issues because we're looking at the reality TV show former president turn our media industry and our electorate into another reality TV show. So I just get really tired and kind of checked out when I see it. I know it's important, but when I look at it,
it's
I get
huge.
Sick of it.
Historical. Yep.
It's historical. I just think there's so many other things, you know?
The first time a former president has ever been charged criminally is a big deal.
I completely agree. I just don't think it should be 24 hours. Like, okay, we got the update. This whole thing.
Well, we can move on to the Supreme Court.
Let's move on to Supreme Court.
I mean, I think part of it is, Tiffany, is I think we oftentimes move very quickly past things that are, you know, that are, in my opinion, considered important. And I do think it will weigh on some people if this man is found guilty, because it changes, it shifts, right? He's been able to escape all the way through this thing, any real responsibility, culpability for what he does. And I'm wondering, really with bated breath, whether or not the Supreme Court is about to allow him to skate on something, frankly, that would be, yes, precedent setting, but I think would upend a lot of people's faith in the Supreme Court and in our quote unquote system of justice and accountability. And what I'm referring to is the fact that there is a case that was argued before the Supreme Court this week around whether or not two of the four charges that were brought by Jack Smith, the special prosecutor here against Trump, are likely to be dropped or not. And because we've got an incredible attorney right here as one of our co-hosts, Angela, I'd love if you could take a minute just to break down into dissectable and understandable ways what the implications are from this week's oral arguments, and obviously its later decision, which will come from the court, we believe, in a month or so.
Okay, so this particular case is Fisher versus United States. And in this case, what is at issue is Section 1512 of Chapter 18 of the United States Code. And here, they are basing their entire argument, they being Fisher's side, their entire argument over this particular clause. Whoever corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding, or, and they go into other examples of obstruction. Fisher's lawyer is trying to argue that this statute is supposed to be about documents. However, if you go down, and notice I said or, in law school you learn a difference between an and or or. And there are other places where you learn a difference between an and or, I don't know, first, second, third, fourth grade, right? So there's an or here. It says, or otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so, right? So that second part, that two, and not the one, but the two, is what is at issue here with all of the folks who went to Capitol Hill at the behest of Donald Trump and his senior advisors to try to stop the steal, as they called it. The steal was the election, them certifying the election in Congress, which is an official proceeding, which is absolutely obstruction. It's obstruction of justice. It's an obstruction of an official proceeding. And they said, they also are arguing corruptly. Well, can they argue corruptly? Yes, because Donald Trump, who was the leader of this movement, was trying to get folks to go to Capitol Hill to stop the steal. Meanwhile, that's exactly what he was trying to do, steal. So that's what is at issue here. And what you saw the justice mostly arguing about is what happens when you are on the outside of this statute, when you're really close to those parameters. And you all can start to imagine, if this case was for something else, something that we were in favor of, if we were concerned, you know, that something else was going on, that they were about to pass a law in Congress that was going to be super harmful for us and we're protesting it, which is going to get us to our next case, Tiff, what happens? What are the parameters there? So how far are they going to go here? And it's really unclear where they're going to land, because there were arguments and questions from the more progressive justices as well as the super conservative ones. I don't know where they're going to land here. It's very fascinating, but I'd be real frustrated if this dude escapes culpability yet again.
Okay, I have a question. So one, when you say U.S. code, I was just asking this, when you say the laws on the books, that's not the Constitution. That No. is federal law?
Yes. Yeah, so the Congress has the responsibility of passing laws. Those things become United States code when the president signs them into law. Right. We have criminal statutes. That's what this mm-hmm. is. We also have civil statutes, things like the CARES Act, which we are familiar with. The CARES Act is something that is code, but it is not criminal code. This is criminal code.
So then two questions. The trial in New York, that is a criminal case. Were Donald Yes. Trump to be found guilty, what could he potentially be facing?
Well, that, I think, was it 34 or 40 indictments just on that one case?
Yeah, 34, yeah, indictments on the, and that also is a state case and not a federal
right.
case.
Right, I get it. I guess so my real question, to be honest, is there any scenario in which Donald Trump will be sentenced to some sort of jail time?
Four years in prison, potentially.
Okay.
4 years in prison.
And so should this president
34 count.
Be convicted? Mm-hmm. Is there a realistic chance that he will walk into prison with Secret Service and everything while running for president and serve? Or will this case likely advance to the Supreme Court at some point? The criminal case I'm talking about.
Oh, Alvin Bragg's? No.
Because it's a
Not
state
likely.
Case.
Yes, but there are instances where state cases find their way to the Supreme Court. It is when there is a constitutional issue in question. Even at the crux of this particular statute, they're arguing the language in that statute, but also what is at issue here is right to protest, right to assemble, which is exactly what happened in DeRay McKesson's case that the Supreme Court decided not to hear. So, Tiff, I know you had something on that.
Yes.
Yeah, Tiff, before you do that, just wrapping this piece, the case that is right now being argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, the biggest impact we think can come from it is it could upend both the trials in Georgia as well as the trial in Miami because both those cases, one deals with Trump's handling, obviously, of classified information, and the other dealing with his actions in Georgia to technically interfere with this legislative process. So I think we're going to keep watching this, but the oral arguments, if you want to hear them, maybe we'll be able to try and post them somewhere on our account. But I know, Tiff, on the DeRay piece, you've got an interesting crux
to draw. Andrew, just for clarification too, on this last point you just raised, I think the bigger concern is the presidential immunity piece, which they are deciding in June or July, that is really what could append those other cases. This is the I guess you could argue the obstruction related to the tampering of votes in Atlanta or Georgia for sure. But I think really everything gets upset if they end up saying
can't be as a president.
Can't be prosecuted.
Which, you know, I have to say on that case, as a layperson, hearing some of the defense argument, it's worth the conversation to have, because I get the point. It's like, well, if this president orders the military to engage in, you know, an assassination of someone that they're taking out, can they then later be prosecuted? I think these do get into legal waters that we've, you know, never before really swam in, but that's what happens when
never before had
right
to.
I was going to say that's what happens when you elect a clown to the highest office of the land. You turn our country into a circus, and we're seeing that happen right now. But you brought up the point about Supreme
Court, that's a bar
that DeRay McKesson. So the Supreme Court refused, I want to be clear, the Supreme Court refused to hear this case, so it got kicked back down to the lower court, the Fifth Circuit Court. Angela, you'll correct me, please, if I say anything wrong legally. So I just want to really quickly try to say what is at issue here. So in 2016, DeRay McKesson, you guys know DeRay McKesson in the blue vest, an activist, he was helping or was invited to organize or help participate in a protest near police headquarters in Baton Rouge. This was after police there shot Alton Sterling, a 37-year-old black man. They'd already immobilized him, pinned him to the ground, but shot him 6 times, murdering him. And during that protest, we don't know who, during that protest, someone threw a rock and severely injured a police officer. The police officer then sued DeRay. Or DeRay, rather. I keep saying DeRay like the comedian, DeRay. And I want you all to hear directly from DeRay what exactly happened that evening from his perspective. Take a listen.
So in November 2016, there was the police killed Alton Sterling, and they killed another man. And it was a big uproar in the country. And the Baton Rouge organizers were like, can you come down? I was like, yeah. And I'm in Baton Rouge for like, I don't know, 15 hours. Like I wasn't in Baton Rouge a lot. I like literally landed, we met with some people, then I went to sleep because I was exhausted, wake up, and then we go out. And it's sort of like, you know, we blocked off this big highway. The police were like on 10,000. It was just like a whole thing. And the police at one point were like, get out of the street. And I'm like, cool, I just started this job. I was a chief human capital for the school system. I told the superintendent I wouldn't get in. Like I'd sort of like lay low, let me get out of the street. So I videotaped him. He's like, out of the street. I show like the line where like the street is. I'm like, I'm out the street. Cool. And the next thing I know, people are running. So I get caught in like this rush of people running. I fall, not a big deal. I go to get up and I can't get up. And I'm like, dang, I'm like really, I'm like pinned down in this group of people. And I realize that the reason I can't get up is actually the police are holding, they're like pressing my shoulder down. Not good. So then I throw my phone. I don't even know what I was thinking. I throw my phone because I don't want the police to get my phone. So I throw the phone, hoping my friends get it. And then I'm in custody for like the next 16, 17 hours. So that started it. But, you know, it was one of those things where like a police officer said that night that he got hit by a rock and that I was the cause of him getting hit by a rock.
So why this is interesting, and I wanted you all to hear directly from DeRay, is because this is a First Amendment issue. This is the right to gather and protest. So Ellie Massaug does a great piece on this in The Nation. I encourage you all to listen to it. But essentially, anybody can show up to a protest, wreak havoc, disappear, and then ruin the protest. We saw during the unrest of 2020, a lot of people who didn't look like us coming into our neighborhoods, giving young black youth bricks to throw, inciting, encouraging violence. And so it's really interesting to see what will happen that the Supreme Court decided not to take up this case, which was essentially, I think, making a statement that will impact how we all protest. And it comes down to, yes, you have the right to assemble and protest under the First Amendment unless you are black. Now, when you look at what happened on January 6th, this is exactly what happened. Donald Trump incited a riot. He encouraged people to go, and certainly those police officers were injured by people he encouraged. So people like Harry Dunn, who's now running for Congress. He was assaulted. Can he now sue Donald Trump? Well, according to the law, he cannot, because what Donald Trump is being accused of, I think there, is obstruction of Congress, not negligently inciting a riot. What I ask is the difference. So I think this is an interesting case, and I just thought the parallels between the two were quite striking. But be sure to read Ellie Mastal's piece in The Nation, because he does a great job.
Meanwhile, the other difference, sorry to...
No, go ahead.
Meanwhile, the other difference is protesting another brutal police killing is not inciting a riot. It might be riot worthy, but it's not inciting a riot. It is a protest. It is the right to assemble. I think what's interesting here is they're also, to be super clear, the Supreme Court decided not to hear this case. They remanded it back to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit said already that the police officer can sue DeRay because while the right to assemble and the right to protest are constitutionally protected, whether or not you get sued for what happens on the other side of that, whether you can still be sued for a tort, is something entirely different. I think he'll be vindicated overall and probably win the civil suit. But it is worth the discussion. Certainly see the hypocrisy. It's screaming.
And then who
at
decides
us.
Negligent of them all? Negligent protests. You know, you got people like the governor of my state and many others that are outlawing protests against law enforcement, are outlawing protests on issues that they consider to be, quote, woke issues. Now, I think as these things are pushed through the law on the other side, that hopefully right will win out. But I'll just say, regardless of the outcome and what happens in DeRay's case and those that are similar to it, let's not mistake what this is. This is a shot over the bow. This is a, if you want to try us, let me tell you to the fullest extent of the law, the parameters, and what's allowed, we can take this thing. So if you, Angela Rye, Tiffany Cross, Andrew Gillum, want to use your platform to promote, I don't know, a rally in Baltimore in defense of the former state attorney, and something goes left for the law enforcement officers who, by the way, sit at the epicenter of the issue regarding Marilyn Mosby, that we can all of a sudden decide that we're gonna come for you, and we're gonna use the instruments of the law to do so. So I think this is hugely problematic, and we shouldn't understate what this is intended to do. It's intended to have us tremble before we ever decide to step out in this way or any other against the powers that be. I wish Brother DeRay the best as he moves forward. Y'all, want to take a quick break to pay some bills? And when we come back, we'll talk the power of the minority.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Despite all the lofty rhetoric of democracy, when our political institutions were set up in the 1780s, they actually were set up to benefit in large part a propertied white male minority, a very affluent white male minority, many of whom were slaveholders. And in fact, the public were largely excluded from choosing the country's leaders. And far from encouraging majority rule, the founding institutions of our country facilitated minority rule instead.
So that was Ari Berman, journalist and author, talking about this idea of minority rule. Ari touched on it, but we want to know, really, what are the primary strategies that conservative white male minority in this country has used and is using to enact policies and laws that most of us, frankly, don't want? And if the majority of us had the opportunity to vote, we wouldn't put it on the books through a citizen vote. But what he touches on, and I know it's touched on by many other authors as well, is whether or not this country is, frankly, truly acting as a democracy.
It's such a good and worthy conversation. You know, I thought about some examples while Ari was speaking. I thought about the filibuster in the Senate, the fact that a simple majority isn't enough to pass legislation. I thought about the Electoral College. When folks often talk about us being three-fifths of a human being, it's because that's what our slaveholders they were designated three-fifths of a vote based on our personhood. So it wasn't one vote, one person, one vote. I also think about authors like you just mentioned, Before the Mayflower, Lerone Bennett, 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah Jones, Black AF History, our good brother and friend Michael Harriet. All these people are our family, by the way. And I just think that we often don't give credit to the fact that we know what we poured into this country, literally our blood shed, Crispus Attucks, right, in the Revolutionary War. We know what we built, and yet we still don't have, because it was always designed to be for a select few. I hate the concept of founding fathers, because founding fathers in and of itself is very exclusionary. It was a small group of men that came together, white men that came together and said, how can we reenact the thing that we tried to escape ourselves? And then how can we put ourselves in power and make sure that that power stays in the hands of a select few? And then as time went on, they continued to morph this thing, to evolve this thing, to say, and how can we get people who look like us, who don't have what we have, but will be in position mentally to keep us with a little bit of power, because they know that there's something to aspire to. They can dream to our status, even though they'll never reach it, because this is not for them. But if we can convince them that they're better than everybody else who they're similarly situated with, we are going to continue to keep this power in the hands of select few. That is, I think, why Donald Trump appeals to them in that way. He is the American dream to these white folks that are carved into the side of a mountain they also don't own and just colonize. So there's all of that. And when I think about what democracy really is. We've talked about it on this show a gazillion times. I also think about the fact that we've never really had what we rightfully deserve. It's never really been one person, one vote. It's been one person, one fight for the vote that you may or may not get. It has been you're going to have to fight to secure legislation and rights just to survive in this country. Don't even worry about thriving yet, sis. Like, there are so many barriers that exist to our true free existence and liberation in this country. And it was built that way by design.
Well, I think the way it, I think that's a great historical perspective and a wrinkle in time it creates, because when you look at how it plays out today and you consider the changing demographics of the country, we're going to see that increasingly so. Look, we're getting closer to the point where there will not be a racial majority in this country. And yet this very small population of people have a stronghold. The Congress last year, the 118th Congress, because it was such gridlock, only passed 31 bills, I believe, making it the least effective Congress since the Great Depression, to put that in perspective. So it's a lot of things that get left on the table. As of January of this year, Republicans control 28 state legislatures, Democrats control 21. And Andrew, you've made the point so many times that people say the Republican Party and Donald Trump as though they are two separate things. They've merged into one. So when you consider that these MAGA right-wing zealot extremists are controlling most of the state legislatures where a lot of this shitty policy bubbles up to federal policy, that should concern us all. They are out of step with the American people by and large. They're out of step with the American people when it comes to reproductive health. They're out of step with the American people when it comes to gun laws. They're out of step with the American people when it comes to racial divides. They're out of step with the American people when it comes to criminal justice reform. They're out of step with the American people when it comes to climate change. So I don't know what to do about it. You know, I mean, obviously, we keep saying voting. But I'm a little concerned because I think that, you know, at some point, this country is fractured and the Civil War doesn't start with the first the blow that struck. The Civil War starts long before that. And so that's why I say, some people say that's dangerous language, it's hyperbolic. I don't think so. I think right now we are seeing this country fracture. And not only is it threatening our livelihood here, it is threatening our place in global diplomacy as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you rightly tossed in some ways to what happens in these states, even when we get out of whack with where the people are. And mind you, y'all, I'm not an extremist by any stretch, and I get why it is that you want common sense showing up on the playing field. For instance, if Brown v. Board of Education had been put to a popular vote at the time, my guess is the majority of voting Americans at the time would not have reversed Plessy v. Ferguson, right? And so we have Supreme Courts, but what Ari and so many others, Michael Harriott and Nicole Hannah-Jones, many of those who are keepers of record, our griots, if you will, are saying is these institutions were established this way by design, and they're only effectuating, they're only doing what they're designed to do. The fact that every single state, regardless of population, has two U.S. senators, and the majority of those little small states get to decide who sits on the Supreme Court. The fact that when I told students that their direct vote on election day didn't equal electing a president, they were baffled. That, because we're a democracy. Yes, when I go vote, I elect the president. I said, nah, there's another special meeting that's going to happen in December here at the state capitol where the electors for the state of Florida are going to come. It's very little talked about, very little rigmarole, because it's just following process. Somebody's going to go into that room, 100 so odd of them, and they're going to vote on electoral votes that will then be sent to Congress. It's important we understand this, y'all, because a lot of us don't realize that there is some distance between us and direct democracy. Yeah. And here are some of the ways in which it plays out in our states. I want you all to hear it directly. We'll go first to Tennessee, where we see a bill that bans the study. Hear me. A bill that bans the study of reparations. Let's hear the sound.
The bill is sponsored by Republican Representative John Reagan of Nashville and Memphis Senator Brent Taylor of Memphis. Before the Senate approved the bill, Taylor pointed to Shelby County approving $5 million to study reparations.
We know this is a very divisive issue, and it's an important issue for many people in our communities. It's an important issue in my community. But, Mr. Speaker, it's an issue that cannot be resolved at the local level.
No one is alive today who was either a slave or a slaveholder in the time frame that slavery was legal in this country. If there were to be a reparations program, the question becomes, from whom are these reparations taken and to whom are these reparations paid?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on that sound, but I will say it's important to call out Tennessee Reverend Earl Fisher. I think,
yes.
Angela, you know Earl, Reverend
brother.
Fisher rather personally, who has been on the advocacy side here and has been collecting signatures to a petition, basically telling the legislature to step back. Angela, what are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are I don't have a whole lot of hope in the Tennessee state legislature. I just would take y'all back two episodes, right? Like, this is the same legislature that is trying to prevent paying Tennessee State University what they're owed. That is modern reparations,
right?
And there are people who are alive who had everything to do with that, and they ain't even trying to pay that. So I'm not confused about why they don't want to study. But here's what we also know. They don't want to study so much that they're taking history books out of classrooms. They don't want us to learn this for free or for pay. They don't want us to learn with their taxpayer dollars or our taxpayer dollars. There's no surprise here. And again, to the point of Tiffany's book. Tiff, you want to shout out your book?
Say it louder. Black Voters, White Narratives, and Saving Our Democracy. Available everywhere books are sold.
What'd you say, Tiff?
Say it
louder. That's
it. I didn't hear it.
One more time for the people in the back.
Louder.
That's it.
Say it like you're high. I'm just playing. But here's the thing. We have to acknowledge what is the elephant in the room. No pun intended, Republicans. Like, we know exactly what you're doing. It is by design. It is at every level. It is at the level of a school board. It is at the state legislature. It is trying to be back in the White House. It is in the halls of Congress. They just took out the DEI office in Congress. What do we expect? Of course they're not trying to go backwards and look at what they owe us and what was done wrong and what is owed to a people that have given everything to this country. They don't want to give us what we deserve today. There's no surprises here. You want to talk about a wage gap? There's a wage gap. They're not trying to pay what they owe us in paychecks today. Of course they're not trying to look at what went wrong back in the day. Now, Reverend Earl, you know that does not mean I'm not going to support the petition. I posted it twice on my stories. I'm going to stand with you, good brother. But I ain't got a lot of hope. Folks got to go to the polls. And it's hard to get folks to go to the polls when we're talking about democracy and the many ways in which our votes have been suppressed, not counted, and tried to be taken over by Donald Trump and Kanye West publicists.
Well, let me tell you, Angela, I mean, and Tiff, you evoked this earlier on in your comments around the emphasis on local, but maybe we aren't down your street yet because we're talking about reparations. We're going to move here now to reproductive rights and see if we get any closer to your street. What's in common here, y'all? You heard it from the senator there. It's not a local issue to decide reparations. Mm-hmm. So when they don't want to deal with it, right, they want to punt to the federal. But when it gets down to reproductive health, which was federally decided.
But Andrew, you do know the states paid slaveholders reparations too. Slaveholders, states pay that. I'm just saying to the brother or whatever he is that said that anyway.
Absolutely.
It's not a state
but we all see it for what it is.
Correct.
This volleying back and forth between what is federal and what is state at your convenience.
That's
so
right.
Let's hear now where they stand on who's responsible for women's reproductive health. Certainly, I'll go ahead and not bury the lead. It ain't the woman herself. Let's hear the sound.
How about that?
The Arizona Supreme Court ruled that prosecutors can enforce a anti-abortion law dating to 1864. It is a complete ban on nearly all abortions. It can only be performed to save the life of the mother. There's no exemptions for rape or incest. Trump appointed three Supreme Court justices. He remade the court during his tenure, moved it decisively to the right, and paved the way for the Dobbs decision in 2022 that ended the constitutional national right to an abortion and returned the issue, allowed states to come up with their own laws like the one in Arizona.
So this is where we are, folks. The 2024 sitting Supreme Court in Arizona just gave way, tossed back to a civil rights era law that existed on the books that basically prohibited any abortion except in cases of the life of the mother. So which way is it going to be? Is it states' rights? Is it federal rights? Y'all, please understand that these things are obviously being chosen at their convenience, which is more important, which is less. But the argument is still fundamental, which is who in the world gets to decide for the majority of us,
right,
what issues stand for the day? We've had two presidents in the 20th century so far who were both elected, sworn in without achieving the national popular vote.
Yeah.
Arizona is now a swing state and has been thrown back to before the Civil War was settled, before the Civil War was ended.
Before Juneteenth for us, before enslaved people in Texas were notified of their freedom, right? June 19th, 1865, this law was on the books in 1864. They said, let's hearken back to what we know. You know what this is also called? Y'all know it. Make America great again. That's what they mean. Everything before 1950, that's what they mean.
Tiff, you follow, well, you are part of the press and still are our resident press expert, media news expert. How do people reconcile what's happened in Arizona with Trump's decision and his appointments to the Supreme Court? Make it make sense.
Yeah, so this is where I think from the judiciary branch of government, I don't think that the left in particular focuses as much because there are so many other issues under attack. But this is precisely what happens. I think during Donald Trump's reign in office, we focus a lot on the Supreme Court. We don't focus as much on the lower courts. During Donald Trump's reign in office, he appointed over 200 judges to lifetime appointments, predominantly white men, and many of whom were completely inept, inexperienced for the job. Some of these people had never even been on the bench before. They were attorneys. Right now, we have an actual handmaiden on the court. Amy Coney Barrett was a literal handmaiden. You can look it up and Google it if you don't believe me. But even when you look at these folks, I mean, we all remember what happened with the justice, the frat boy, who was, I like beer.
Kavanaugh.
When we saw his testimony, like we could never, would never. And then when you look at what they're upholding at the federal level of government. So I think it's a lot of consequences. And again, this is an example of what you call minority rule, Andrew. This is a tiny amount of people enacting laws and policies that run contrary to our interests. And I think the question is, what do we do about it? How do we stop it? And a lot of this, unfortunately, in our lifetimes, we may not see, but I think a lot of this has to be reimagining the Supreme Court. Some people talked about expanding the Supreme Court.
Yes.
But also just reimagining democracy. That might be a good evergreen, Andrew, just reimagining a democracy that serves us.
Yeah.
This is one thing I just want to say here really quick. One like key point is the very thing that you started with on the state level, which was the study of reparations, is the very thing that put the minority in position to rule forever. That is financing. They have been able to pay their way to play at every single level. It is by design. We talked about Project 2025. If y'all haven't watched that episode or listened to that episode, run that thing back because it has everything to do with what's happening now. Minority rule through lifetime judicial appointments. Minority rule through being able to buy your way into elected office at every single level. Minority rule through burrowing into career level positions on the state, local, and federal level. Government pay positions that y'all's taxpayer dollars are paying for. That is how the minority continues to rule, through strategy, through money, and by occupying all of those seats. That is how. So if we don't take that over through our activism,
yeah,
is all I'm trying to get out of my mouth.
Yeah.
If we don't take it over that way, I don't know that we can outpace them from a funding perspective. We fight to get our folks to see, hey, this America First Legal thing that Stephen Miller is doing, the stuff that Ed Blum is doing, we need our own version of that, not to counter those attacks, but to have some proactive attacks. We will not be able to win on a lot of those cases because minority rule has found itself into lifetime appointments in the judicial branch. We have to start planning for these things in a a lot more strategic way. And it's very difficult to do when all we're trying to do is live when we interact with the police officer. And when all we're trying to do is make sure that we can make ends meet when our wages aren't the same as everyone else. When all we're trying to do is make sure that on the other side of a rape situation or an incest or a mistake, one bad night, people aren't stuck with a lifetime of a decision because of whatever. Anyway. I'm down the road,
Angela,
but you understand what I'm saying.
Actually, I know you're going in there. It's one of the reasons why I would love for us to hear a listener question right after this break that hits a little bit on those themes, except in a way that I think you probably wouldn't guess.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Native Land Pod. My name is Diallo. I'm based in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm 23 years old. My question is I feel like there's an elephant in the room, especially being in the South, that even though a large majority of Black religious voters, I subscribe to Christianity, vote Democratic, we also hold conservative and traditional values, but there seems to be in the Democratic Party not like a really planned and robust way to reach the Black religious voter. And I think it can just be frustrating because anytime we talk about faith, we're kind of lumped in with white evangelicalism, even when it comes to different views, even such things as abortion. I think Black people, we have more of a moderate view of abortion that is not necessarily aligning with the Democratic Party and not necessarily aligning with the Republican Party. So what do you guys think that we can do to address this, address these types of voters? Have you guys seen this?
I appreciate that, Diallo. What do you think, Tiff?
I think he's saying a lot of a very point, making a very poignant point that is often lost on both parties. And we've said this here a lot. We are not a homogenous group of people. We're not a homogenous voting bloc. We have varying different socioeconomic backgrounds that drive our interest here. I think it's so unfortunate because where our commonality is, can we just live? Can you stop shooting us? Can you allow us the freedom to breathe and thrive and take care of our children and pay our mortgage and all the things that the rest of mostly white America gets to do. When it comes to the conservative part of the black vote, I think the media narrative has gotten this completely wrong, suggesting that there's this drove of black men voting for Donald Trump. I don't think that's true. I think there are people who go to church every Sunday who probably don't believe in gender, some of the like same loving gender policies out there. I have a challenge with that. I don't believe in that, and I don't support that kind of discrimination. But certainly there are black folks who feel that way. There's certainly a high pocket of black folks who don't support marijuana legislation. I've seen a whole lot of preachers in the pulpit talk about, you know, why you want to support a law that'll dull your mind and make you think things. Mm-hmm. I think these things are out of step with society, and I think that they are out of step with the way most of America goes. But there are people in my own family feel some of these things. So I'm happy to get the question because I think it shows that there is a wide swath of people. The Democratic Party has to be a big tent of folks and punctuates the point that we have to have more than a two-party system. I would hope that this man can continue to vote in the interest of the greater good. That's where we as black folks don't have the privilege to say, well, I like this person. They speak directly to me. We have to always think community. I might not agree with every single thing this person says, but in the interest of my community, I'm going to vote in this particular party or for this particular candidate.
That's real. That's real. And really, ladies, in the spirit of community, we all know and have been acknowledging this past week, Black Maternal Health Week. Our mothers, we've got to care for our mamas and those who are aspiring in that way. And we all know the numbers are staggering when it comes to infant mortality, Black infant mortality and Black maternal health. Angela, I know this is an issue that's also very, very close to you. Building upon this theme of us caring after all of those in our community, what would be the charge as we close out this acknowledgement, this recognition of Black maternal health and infant mortality?
I think the most important thing is that people understand the disparities that exist. Oftentimes when folks are fighting the ghost of racism that they think does not exist, they fail to take data into consideration. Yeah. So if Black women are dying in childbirth at a rate three times higher than white women, I think that speaks volumes. I know we have a clip from Dr. Cleopatra Campervin, who speaks about the prejudiced brain and why it's so important to care about Black maternal health.
My brain is prejudiced and your brain is prejudiced. And this prejudice accounts for the up to 80% of maternal deaths that are preventable. I'm Dr. Cleopatra, fertility scientist, and I want to show you how. Our brains use mental shortcuts called schemas to quickly process information. This allowed our ancestors to survive, but today it divides us into us versus them. And when they become less human in the eyes of us, it leads directly to the tragedy of lives lost, of mothers who could have been saved, mothers like my own mother who I lost at birth. I know it's tough to hear, and I promise you it's even tougher to live. That's why we need urgent systems in place that actively counter the human brain's natural tendency toward prejudice and bias. Our Color Me Mommy Toolkit, the Momnibus Bill, these are not just initiatives, they are actual lifelines.
She raises some really good points, and I know we also have a question on this issue.
Hey, hello, Native Land Pod. My name is Olivia Atley. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. I'm a full spectrum doula and a mama of two. My question for you all is, as we know the awful state of maternal and infant mortality in our country, especially as it pertains to Black and brown individuals, I'm wanting to know y'all's opinion and advice on how we keep the very important agenda in front of our legislators to improve these rates in a way that is fresh and relevant so that they won't forget it and they won't think that it's no longer a problem or an issue. just wanting some more advice on how we continue to push this agenda forward. What else can and should we be doing? Thank you.
You know, I think about the work that Kamala was engaging in as a senator, and now many others continue that work, including Congresswoman Lauren Underwood and so many other Black women. Shout out to the CBC women. There's a Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act that works to create conditions conducive to safe birthing experiences. A lot of times when Black women are talking about any pain they're experiencing, they're not believed. And that is how many of these deaths occur. Just simple belief. If someone is telling you they're in pain or something doesn't feel right, this woman has lived in her body her whole life. You should probably listen to her. So this bill, as well as many others, works to protect Black women in their birthing experiences. Shouldn't be traumatic. It should be the most joyful time of their lives. I know I'm working to become a mom. The fertility journey has been a brutal one for me. And I'll tell you the truth. I'm like, okay, after we can get an embryo made and it implants, and I just hope that I can have a safe birth. A dear friend of ours, Stephanie Young, recently gave birth to a beautiful baby
girl. Congrats, Steph.
And even hearing about some of Steph's complications, you know, you hit 40 and the things just, it gets really challenging. Thank God she has a healthy baby. Thank God she's healthy. But all along the journey, there are different things. They just hit us differently. So we need to be made aware. And shout out to all of the folks who worked so diligently to create Black Maternal Health Week.
Yeah. And, you know, even not dealing with, you know, pregnancies in advanced age or what is considered more advanced, higher risk age.
Yeah.
You have the issues of women who report pain while still in the hospital or immediately after release. And you have doctors who chalk it up to, oh, she just wants a prescribed a painkiller, you know, oh, you know, take some Tylenol, it'll be okay. And days later, if that, the woman perishes and nobody has an explicable reason as to why. I've had it happen to classmates, to friends, to others, kids who have been orphaned while their mothers lay, you know, practically on the delivery table.
Yeah.
So the our need to give voice to this is important. And I appreciate you lifting this up as we close out Black Maternal Health Week. This ought to be a topic that's 365. So y'all keep the conversation going. And speaking of women and their value, I don't want to be out of tune by making this connection, but when we talk about what is being paid, offered women for their work, it doesn't just happen in corporate places. It's not just happening in chains. It's happening in some of the most high profile environments that you and I know, the WNBA. Let's hear from WNBA star Kelsey Plum, who explains how the NBA and the WNBA players are paid so differently.
You know, we talk about the CBA, right? So the collective bargaining agreement. And in the NBA, they have percentages of revenue shared for the players, right?
Right.
So jersey sales, obviously their TV contracts. You see these every year, these contracts get bigger and bigger and bigger, right?
Yeah, massive.
But that's because their CBA, it negotiates where the, you know, if the owners are making certain types of money, they get that as well.
Got it.
In the WNBA, that's not the case.
Oh, wow.
So in 2025, that's our new, you know, opportunity to renegotiate or opt out. So there are definitely future opportunities coming, but I will say that it's one of those things that we are not asking to get paid what the men get paid. We're asking to get paid the same percentage of revenue shared.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Got it. So that's a huge misconception.
That's a huge misconception.
Got it. Okay, for sure.
Yeah, because every video is like, oh, this person gets paid this person gets paid that, right?
So I want to be really clear about that. Like, I don't think I should get paid the same as LeBron.
Right.
But the percentage of revenue, like, for example, they sell my jersey in Mandalay Bay, I don't get a dime.
You don't get any money from jersey sales?
That's crazy.
Yeah. this is one, Tiff. I know you are a resident sports expert,
right?
But I saw, you know what? I'm gonna wait.
Thank
for the
you, because you guys like to step on my toes when it comes to sports, and you know that's my thing. So if I may have the floor for a second,
so rude.
Kelsey Plum. I don't want to outshine anybody, so I'll let Angela tell us who she plays for. But she is an amazing WNBA star. And I thought this was such a poignant point because I get so tired of hearing the men talk about, you know, well, they don't make as much money. Or not even just the men, but people make the point that they don't make as much money as the men. So why should they get paid? I love how she broke this down. It is all about collective bargaining, the collective bargaining agreement, the CBA. This is a union issue. The WNBA has a players association compensation just like the NBA does, somebody who goes to the bargaining table and set these contracts. As we know, Caitlin Clark at no point in her contract will make six figures. Now, her endorsements will carry her over. She'll be fine. But that's one player. Angel Reese, that's one player. There are hundreds of players in the WNBA who will never make that much money. I have to say, too, even though I completely support Kelsey Plum's point, the other challenge I will make is to consumers, viewers, women in particular. Yes. I'm calling on you. Watch the WNBA. Get into it. I, despite being a sports expert, don't always watch every single game. And I've been into it. We, Angela, our group chat, we are in it. We were watching the draft. We were talking about what people were wearing, who was going to what team. It was so exciting. Watching the playoffs at the college level was so exciting for me. And I have to say, I think, Angela, you made this point too. I kind of feel like the women's sports arm of this is a lot more interesting than the WNBA. I look at the coaches on the sideline. Watching Dawn Staley coach, I mean, that is watching magic. Gosh. I'm getting so excited watching it.
You said the women's teams are more excited than the WNBA. I just wanted to fix it.
What did I say?
I know you said the WNBA. That's still women. I just think you just was excited.
Well, I get so excited when we talk about sports because I'm so passionate about this subject. So I may have misspoke. But really, if you want to see these women make more money, one thing you can do is watch the WNBA. And I personally am looking for a team. And I said wherever Angel Reese went to play, will be my team, and she's going to Chicago. So that might be my team. I'm not fully committed yet, but that might be my team. Stay tuned.
I think they should draft you, Tiff.
I honestly would love to do some sort of commentary, captain. Color commentary, the towel, whatever I need to do. I want to be a part of it. I would like to be a part of it.
Oh, she doesn't want to play, Andrew.
I know, right?
Here's the one thing that I was going to say, and it goes right to the heart of what Tiff was saying around consumers. Mm-hmm. I know she has a weed is vegan shirt, but we're not quite at that consumption piece yet. We're just talking about consuming the sport. What I think we also need to understand is the importance of ticket sales. People need to go to the games. Don't be like, oh, these salaries are such a shame, but you know that you're buying LaMelo sneakers, but you ain't never picked up a Stewie sneaker. Like, what are we even talking about? So I think that you gotta understand the role that we also play in this. We go to the polls. We also got to go to the courts and go to the courts for the girls. To Tiff's point, I was making the argument, and the numbers reflect the same. The Final Four, NCAA Final Four championship for the women outpaced the men. So let's just be very clear about
this. Did it really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
More viewers because it was a way more exciting game.
I love it.
And I also think that we have to understand that has to translate over to the WNBA. I love the folks talking about salaries. It is not an issue that we know, again, that's exclusive to the WNBA. We have pay disparities across the board. But this is one where we could really run the court on, no pun intended, to ensure that
Can
changes.
I ask a quick question?
That's real.
This is to Angela. Are the machetes, our group chat, what game are we going to? What game should we go to?
Can I tell, I'm biased because you know I don't have my Sonics anymore in Seattle. Oh, so gosh. Andrew, you're also invited. You can be honorary machete. We got some guys in as honorary machetes. The thing that I would say is I would love to go to the Seattle Storm. We have a black coach. She is incredible. We have Aneka is now on the team. We got Skylar on the team. We lost Stewie, but we have a good bench. And Sue Bird, of course, is retired. But I think this is going to be a premier game, though, like a season opener.
If you're there, it's a premier game.
Thank you.
Noelle Quinn is who I'm talking about. I love Noelle. She is incredible. She's the coach of the Seattle Storm. So y'all are always welcome to support my team. I'm trying to get season tickets.
I just want to go I want to be courtside at like the season opener premier game and cheer on the all yes. the.
It's premier if you're there. Okay. If you're there,
when does the season start?
But all the points are well made.
Somebody in the comments tell me when the season starts.
May 14th. I'm trying to get there. Andrew's in the middle of a
May
point.
May 14th. Yeah. My bad, Andrew.
I just want to make sure we get it all in.
Against
and speaking of getting
Leafs.
It in, after this commercial break,
are
we have a quick little highlight as we
yet?
Celebrate the one and only 420.
Not four.
420.
Not a purr. This group needs help.
We'll be right back.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we consider the state of play on this 420, this approaching 420, I didn't get the memo for, you know, broadcasting my position on this. When I was running for governor, I was for full recreational and medical legalization. Thumbs up. But my friend over here, Tiff, came fully prepared. But before I toss it over to you, Tiffany, just want to acknowledge that, and the time, the ways we have come, if you will. I threw a map up on the screen here, which just shows that the overwhelming majority of states have already legalized some form of medicinal use of marijuana. And for those who get it confused and think you got to clutch your pearls when we mention this, I got a couple of aunties and uncles and stuff who are on the gummies that help them sleep and rest. So don't judge too quickly, because we don't know what's in your medicine box yet.
Don't lie.
They're right. Outstanding part of this is not necessarily the medical or the recreational catching up, but really the federal government catching up with states and what they are already doing to reduce the stigma around medical marijuana. Now, Tiff, I think your shirt applies whether we're talking about medicinally or recreationally. But tell us, where do you stand as we approach 420?
Well, this may shock you, but I am pro legalization of marijuana. Listen,
everywhere,
if you're watching this
every
on
time,
a Saturday,
every day.
Exactly. If you're watching this on this Saturday, happy 420 to you. Saturday is the day that weed smokers unite, I would say, in one big puff, puff, pass communion. But before you celebrate that sticky icky, I think it's important that you know, take a time back to when, and we were alive during this time, that these Mary Jane exchanges were confined to street corners, or you had your dude, so to speak, on speed dial. But now, just as Andrew pointed out, that most of the country has legalized the drug, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So while some of us are certainly enjoying one kind of green, there's a whole other group of people pocketing another kind of green. And what's worse is marijuana laws still devastated communities. They still put or ensnared a bunch of black people into a very unforgiving criminal justice system, which we talked about on this show. According to the ACLU, marijuana arrests once accounted for over half the drug arrest in this country. So think about that. And while people are still building wealth, there are people who are still in jail today because of laws having to do with marijuana. So if you want to sell weed legally today, which I think is a really big issue in the black community, shout out to Andre Iguodala, Al Harrington, and other people out there who are trying to get into the dispensary game. But you need a license to sell. That can cost you up to $120,000, if not more now. Throw in legal fees, insurance, rental fees, marketing, taxes, and your costs can literally balloon into the millions of dollars. And with the wealth gap, I don't have to tell you guys about that. Black folks are far less likely to get loans to support this kind of business. So in some regards, we are left out of the rotation. There are some programs intending to address this, but they have a long way to go. So as you're doing your puff, puff, pass, however you're celebrating 420 before you roll up those backwoods, just put a lot more thought and energy, I would invite you, into the kind of green you can pocket, not just the kind of green you can inhale.
All right, co-hosts, we're at the point of our calls to actions. What's the altar call this week?
I like the altar call. Call to action.
I didn't want to be sacrilegious. So
I pray now. We saved. And not everybody goes to church.
The altar of the pod.
So we have plenty of people who listen who don't go to church.
The altar of the pod.
But I'm safe.
What you got, Angela? What you thinking this week?
Oh, I'm first.
You're first. Yes.
You know, I like where Tiff was in the section where we talked about supporting women's sports. So join us as we all go to a season opener. I think this is a good challenge, Tiff. Hopefully we all can get to Seattle on May 14th. If not, find one in your hometown or near a hometown. Go support these incredible women hooping, like running circles around some of these dudes out here. So that is going to be my call to action. Support the WNBA. Don't just post about it. Don't just complain about it. Go buy a ticket about it.
There I love is. That. And there tell us is. In the comments which team, which opener we should go to, what team we should be supporting. I'm curious to hear from you guys as I navigate my journey into the WNBA.
Is that
my
your,
turn?
That's your
68? No, that's not my call to action. No.
All right.
I was just echoing my sister Angela because we need input from the group at large to see where which game we're going to go to. My call to action is, I know you are, but I mean for our whole group to go together. Okay, I'm down to go to Seattle, but I want to see where everybody else has to say. My call to action this week, it's a very niche, so I apologize to the people this doesn't apply to. It's a call to action and a shout out. We've shouted out Nicole Hannah-Jones a few times on this episode, but I want to shout her out again. I attended an event that she did last night at Howard University with her journalism students. There were probably 200-300 people there, and her students love her. Like everyone in the comms department who are learning from her. And it made me think, because I get so much outreach from students when I meet people, when I'm out. I just did an event at the Gathering Spot. Shout out to the Gathering Spot, by the way, where I broadcast from. I just did an event at the Gathering Spot in Atlanta. And so many people will come up to me and say, I want to do what you do. I want to be a journalist. And when I start asking those questions, what papers do you read every day? What niche are you interested in? Who are some of your favorite bylines? They can't answer. So my heart was full last night watching these students really study the craft, really understand what it is to be a journalist. Understanding, she's teaching them about sourcing, about fact finding, about reporting. I think some people conflate that. A lot of you guys out there who ask me, what, you know, that you want to do what I do. You think it's about going on TV, giving your opinion, and that's not it. I don't care about your opinion. Maybe some people do, but mostly I don't care. Why, if you haven't, Angela worked on Capitol Hill, was a strategist. Andrew was a politician. Like, these were jobs and careers that people have. And so, you know, you have to kind of earn that place to give your opinion. Journalism is reporting. It's fact finding. It's news gathering. So if that is a career that you want to pursue, young people, I beg you, take it seriously. Get into a great J school. Learn how to do it. There's an art to sharing information, to fact finding, to fact checking. Learn it, understand it, study it, take it seriously, and then enter the profession and honor it as it should be, because it has such credo in the Black community about bearing witness and coming back and reporting what you've uncovered.
I feel that. You remind me of like one of my PD, professional development teachers, who would always just call us to hire service, hire delivery. If you want to do this, there's some things you got to get in place before you get there.
Yeah,
I feel that. I often share that when I'm talking to folks about running for office. Look, what do you care about? What motivates you? What gives you that, you know, fire in the belly to go get it done? Well, my CTA, y'all, one, join me in finding a constructive way to celebrate 420. It'll be my first time trying to do that in real form. And then I want to reiterate a CTA that was, I think, issued last week or the week before. I would love, love, love to keep hearing from you all about the kinds of ads you want to hear in the political season. Mm. I think it's just so, Angela riffed real strong on, I thought was an ideal ad from someone putting, you know, their circumstance centerfold, and then letting that power through commercials speak for themselves, put at the epicenter of the issue of I don't know, Black inclusion, the folks who have been left out. I gave the example of my kids who never had a Black teacher, and so it mattered to see a Black person in the front of the classroom. I just saw the cast of A Different World getting their roses while they're here. Yeah. If I could tell them myself, I would say they are the reason I went to college. I tried to go to Hillman, but I didn't know it was fake. I learned that in the process of sending my SAT scores out, and I couldn't find the code for Hillman. So it didn't go to Hillman. But whatever that might be, that thing that brings you in, that reels you in, that story that you hear that says, man, they are walking down my street. Keep sharing those with us, because you don't know who we know. It might end up in an ad somewhere. You may end up in an ad somewhere. So keep giving us those ideas that you think might be good to move, motivate, and inspire you to get to the polls. And before we wrap this episode, y'all, we can't leave without asking you to leave a review, subscribe to Native Land Pod. The more you subscribe, the more you download an episode, even if you have to delete it after you listen to it. That helps us on the algorithms show up in your and your friends' respective social media feeds. New episodes drop, as you probably know by now, every Thursday. You can also follow us on social media. We are Angela Rye, Tiffany Cross, and Andrew Gillum. Welcome home, y'all. There are approximately, if not exactly, 200 days until Election Day.
Lord help. Welcome home, y'all.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to get your favorite shows.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school, like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro. That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.